Welcome to an extra episode of Conduct Detrimental. I am Dan Lust. I'm joined this week by Mike Lawson. What's up, Mike?
How's it going, Dan?
So, Mike, before we get into the fun stuff, we want to do an extra episode because of all the stuff on the Trevor Bauer front. Just a reminder, our show is sponsored by the one, the only, Themis. I will say, Mike, confidently, the best bar review prep program, not because they sponsor this podcast, but because they love this podcast and they listen to this podcast. So, as for some important details, we decided to do something a little new this week. We'll see if we continue it for further weeks, but we're calling it an extra episode of Conduct Detrimental. Probably for our purposes, we'll call it an unfiltered episode. We're just going to kind of riff for about 15 minutes, and then we're going to put this out. So normally we do a long episode that's like an hour, and we figured there's a lot of sports law recently. Let's see if we can maybe bank a second episode in the week. So why we wanted to do it this week, pretty big week between the Trevor Bauer stuff, the Deshaun Watson stuff with these FBI connections, but we'll talk about the FBI stuff for Deshaun Watson a little bit next week. So why we wanted to do this, we wanted to have an emergency breakdown of the Trevor Bauer testimony. We've just finished the accuser going on the stand for her direct, cross, or redirect. There's been some other experts that have testified, but we're now 3 days in and our last podcast only really addressed the first day of testimony. So what we wanted to do is kind of talk about, you know, what's going on in this hearing, you know, so far. We're going to break down the last 2 days of testimony and then, you know, how this can impact the criminal case. So Mike, first, let me get your overall thoughts and we can kind of talk about how these issues kind of break out.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, full credit to the accuser here. As somebody who works on the plaintiff's side, has done work on these type of sensitive issues of sexual assault and rape, really, it shows the strength and courage that she has to take the stand here. I think a couple of weeks ago, they said that her testimony might last 2-3 hours, and I think she was going around 12 hours. So really, you know, good for her to kind of stand up to this and all of the questions that were coming on the cross-examination, a lot of it, which was, I think, just non-admissible. I think a lot of it wasn't relevant at all. But good for her for really taking the stand and having the courage to go up there.
You know, I should mention, as much as we are talking about these issues from a sports level, this is certainly touching upon evidence, evidentiary issues, and criminal procedure issues. And before we go further, we should mention this podcast, as well as all podcasts until we say otherwise, is sponsored by Themis Bar Review. Themis is great. Themis is good. You know, Themis, obviously, they'll hook you up on all fronts in a very creative, different visual way for people like myself who are visual learners. So, you know, I really see three issues when it comes to this restraining order. And then we'll talk about that. But like in a larger context, I've mentioned in the last show, like Major League Baseball is looking at every word that comes out of this hearing. The DA's office is looking at every word that comes out of this hearing because they're trying to figure out what the next shoe to drop is, be it Major League Baseball discipline, be it a suspension, or some form of criminal charges. No criminal charge has been filed to date. That could change. Doesn't mean that it won't happen. It just means that for purposes of this particular statute, the restraining order statute that we're going to talk about, it did not need to have criminal charges filed as like a precursor. So the way I see this and the way the arguments are kind of shaping out, there's really like three categories. The first argument that Trevor Bauer's attorneys are trying to show is that, hey, this domestic violence restraining order statute requires some form of a real relationship between the two people. And you can't take advantage of the statute with just some kind of fly-by-night, right? Like we talked about the Deshaun Watson situation a lot. These are just kind of one-off masseuses kind of coming in. And I don't know. I don't think there's any allegation that Deshaun Watson was talking to them after the fact. So I would say that's not a real relationship. I think there are shades of gray with this one. And that's a little bit of this testimony that I took issue with. But I see what Trevor Bauer's team is now trying to do. I don't think it should have been allowed in, but I see what they're trying to do. Second issue is obviously the issue of consent. You know, and that's kind of speaking to the criminal case. And the third one is this issue of future harm. So, Mike, I'll let you pick. You want to talk about whether this relationship is legit? You want to talk about consent or you want to talk about future harm?
Well, we'll talk about all three, but I think let's start with consent first. I think that's an area that most people are kind of talking about. The relationship aspect of it is interesting. And I agree with you. I take issue with the way that they were trying to attack that they were not in a relationship, but it really boils down, and especially when it comes to the criminal, the future criminal actions against Trevor Bauer, I think the biggest thing is she said that she didn't start this restraining order process for 6 weeks because she was told that criminal charges were possibly on the horizon.
He was about to be arrested, not just criminal.
Right. Right. He was going to be arrested. So they were way past the point of having a criminal complaint done, a criminal charge done. It really, that boils down to that she was, and again, you know, trigger warning for all of this, this is a very sensitive issue here, is that she was raped, is that she did not have the consent and she was sexually assaulted. And that goes to the pictures and the testimony today by the experts regarding the extent of her injuries and the fact that she was unconscious when Trevor Bauer was having intercourse with her. And We talked about this in the last episode, and they, Matt Timpanic and Bill Shaken, they really went into detail about what consent means and the advanced consent and, you know, having this type of, I'm going to use aggressive lightly here, an aggressive relationship with more than normal consent you would imagine. But the text messages were kind of going back and forth that they were involved in an aggressive relationship sexually. And the problem is under California code, when it comes to rape, California code, it's 261A I'm reading off of here, 261A4, where the person at the time is unconscious of the nature of the act. And there's a bunch of different conditions that meet the terms of what unconscious means. But the first one is unconscious or asleep. So she lost consciousness, whether or not she consented before the fact. She then lost consciousness, which removes her ability to consent from that point forward. So that is where, under the statute for California criminal code, that it would fall under the definition of rape. Now, whether or not there's enough to bring a charge, I think the evidentiary issues that you were just talking about is what is happening in the background that we just don't know about until a possible charge is going to happen. And, you know, on the last episode, we talked about this is kind of a show for the criminal aspect, where we'll see how the witnesses are, how the accuser is, and that will kind of relay how the criminal procedure is going to go too. But Dan, why don't you jump into the relationship aspect here? I mean, you were all over this on Twitter about what they were trying to use to dismiss the fact that they were in a relationship.
Before we get off of it, and I don't want to hit that long. I think the consent issue is pretty easy. I mean, like, the consent doesn't really have anything to do with the restraining order, whether there was consent or restraining order is future looking, which we haven't really spoke about, but you know, obviously Major League Baseball is looking at it and the DA is looking at it for a purpose of future criminal charges. So to me, I think Matt Timpanic, and I think you've addressed it, and I think we've all hit it on different shows. It's like, okay, if she was truly unconscious, you do not have the legal capacity to consent to certain things. Here's the question. Was she actually rendered unconscious? I don't think the nurses and examiners, I don't think we've heard any testimony that they can definitively tell you that she was unconscious for a period of time. So it's a he said, she said. So then it comes down to credibility, right? I didn't put this one online just because I don't know. I felt bad with all these trigger warnings, but like, this is a case involving sexual assault. This is a really loaded cross-examination. They're just relevant. So I'm going to blank out a little bit of this, but I don't know. I think it's important for people to get an understanding of the case. Two, I think, bombshell lines that were dropped on the accuser during cross-examination, like just bombshells. If you're in your mock trial class, like, I don't know, or you're in a real trial, like, I would think these are really big, heavy lines that the accuser was just hit with. And I don't know if she's survived them in terms of her credibility. So the accuser was asked about a text to her AA sponsor after she had been granted temporary restraining order, in which the accuser said Bauer could slap her in the if he gave her $15 million. And then the attorney read it out loud and said, so it'd be all okay if he gave you $15 million, right? And then the accuser sat back and said, not necessarily. So you have the accuser with these like loaded texts that she's saying, he could slap me if he gives me $15 million. Like, that's not good for your credibility. It's not good at all. And then the other one was a text again from her sponsor. And I don't really know how her sponsor's texts are coming out, but you know, whatever. You know, it was a picture of the accuser looking happy. And I guess she sent it to her sponsor. Hey, can I post this online? And the sponsor writes, please don't post. You are supposed to be struggling mentally, not posting. That would be a terrible mistake. I know you want to, but it's terrible for your case. And then the accuser's text response thanked the sponsor for the advice and ended with the term, quote, secure the bag. And Bauer's attorney asked her if the meaning of that term means get the money. I know what secure the bag means. You know what it means. Any reasonable person that knows what that term is knows what it means. And then, you know, the accuser said, I'm not sure. So she doesn't really seem that credible on the issue of consent. Like, all I can tell you is like, let a judge decide, but there are issues of the issue of consent. Okay. So then, you know, the first one, and then we'll get to the last one. Was there a real relationship here? There was a lot of texts that were going back, a lot of flirtation in text, in direct messaging. You know, that's not my job to kind of opine, but I certainly think this is a lot closer to a relationship than it is a Deshaun Watson type situation. She's someone that was really, you know, they had seemingly a lot of interest. She was really passionate about baseball. She, you know, I'm not going to get into the specifics, but she's from the baseball, you know, universe. You know, she's passionate for baseball. You know, is there a world where there was some type of relationship that was done here? Sure. Does it matter that Trevor Bauer has these bizarre no strings attached rules that he doesn't get serious with anyone? I don't really think that's relevant to anything. It's a matter of what she thought in her own head subjectively. So yeah, I think there could be certainly a qualifying relationship here.
I agree. I think that's pretty easy to see, just the volume of text. I think what was difficult was, I don't think it was relevant, was that Bauer's attorneys were attempting to show that she had previous relationships.
Wasn't that the absolute worst? I hated
it. Terrible. That was a nightmare line of questioning, because they were trying to show that she kind of bounced around from different athletes
and teammates,
baseball players specifically, like, right. Teammates, right. I think that was just completely blatantly wrong and just not relevant, because what's happening is what's happening right now. It was their relationship between Bauer and the accuser. And I think that it's pretty obvious that there were, with the volume of text, the messages back and forth, the interest, and then there were these two encounters here. So I think it's pretty easy to show. And again, subjectively, like it was in her mind, she thought that they were in a relationship. It didn't matter what his rules were, like you just said.
This is a sports podcast. I mean, I don't, not necessarily it's relevant, but like you put him out there. She had a relationship with Fernando Tatis, you know, San Diego Padres superstar, and Mike Clevenger, super pitcher on the Padres. And the testimony that these things coming out was over her attorney's objection. So, you know, I don't really think they're relevant to consent. I don't think they're relevant to the issue of future harm, which we're about to get into. And she was really upset on the stand. And I think, you know, you can object to questions that are designed to harass or intentionally annoy. I can't tell you why those are relevant. The fact that she had a bunch of, you know, fling relationships, even if she did, or that she did this thing for baseball players, it doesn't tell you anything about the seriousness of her relationship with Trevor Bauer. So, I mean, obviously the judge has some leeway to let the stuff in, but I thought that was just rude. I mean, rude, cruel, whatever you want to call it. I just thought it was inappropriate.
Absolutely. And then they were trying to hint at her problems with alcohol and talking about when she had a drinking problem and after she had a drinking problem.
What does that have to do with anything?
Nothing. That has absolutely nothing to do with the restraining order and with the issue of the fear of future harm. I mean, it's completely irrelevant.
I'll tell you something that's also irrelevant, which I spoke to a couple of people that were in the room. You know, I spoke to someone, I went to a publication. I go, okay, you can tell me, I guess those are maybe in some insane world, those are relevant to the domestic violence if there's a serious relationship or not. Tell me, someone has to tell me, why would it be relevant that Fernando Tatis had a picture of him holding his eye up and mocking Trevor Bauer? That was submitted as evidence in the case. And I go, somebody explain to me why that was relevant, why that got in the case. That just seems like, do you think this is an extortion attempt between her and Fernando Tatis against Trevor Bauer? Like, obviously not.
I thought it was them trying to say that she had this relationship with Bauer and Tatis, and like maybe she was still seeing Tatis because Tatis was making fun of her, some sort of jealousy or something like that, that there was clearly not a specific relationship.
An absolute fishing expedition. The judge has got to sit in there. The judge is the gatekeeper of all this evidence. Like that picture should not come in. It was an absolute joke. You know, so people that were half paying attention to the case, they woke up when they saw that text. They go, what is going on? But I think that's it. You know, like, I don't know if there's a real relationship. I think it's 50-50. And this is me saying this. I don't know. I think there's a world where there is one. I don't think Bauer's dating rules have any relevance. I think the consent is somewhat 50-50. And so, Mike, do you want me to go on the third one, or you want to jump into it first about the issue?
I want to jump on a question here that you mentioned, going back to the part where you were talking about the consent here. And then it ties right into the relationship as well, whether or not that she, obviously the third, what you were saying is the third part of this, the third issue is the fear of future harm, right? The purpose of this restraining order is that she feared for her life moving forward, was afraid of Bauer. And we see in these text messages and what Bauer's attorneys, I should say, were attempting to do was the fact that they hadn't had any contact for the last 6 weeks. And then she was saying, you know, the only reason I waited 6 weeks was because I was under the impression that he was going to be arrested. So, and she was afraid. Now, to the consent point, do you think, and I think she won in this aspect. I think she, as much as you say, she lost some credibility, kind of flip-flopping with the text messages here. She made a statement where she was basically saying that she was afraid of Bauer and was just kind of saying anything to him. And it wasn't actually true. And that she was afraid for her life. And that was the whole purpose of this restraining order, is that, okay, yeah, I might've been saying this, but it was more in the aspect of I was afraid of him and I was afraid of what he would do to me if I said no to him.
Listen, I try to be pretty objective. All I can do is I walked into the case without knowing as much. Obviously, I saw a lot of the testimony and I read a lot of it. I think it's hard to ignore the text message that says, get the bag. And she's saying, we're going to sell, like the day that Bauer served the legal papers, she goes, we're out to celebrate. You know, I think people treat, you know, being a survivors or, you know, accusers, whatever you want to call it, in all sorts of different ways. But if you're a judge, like, you have to factor that stuff in, right? That she's, I'll let him slap me for $15 million. I consented to him punching me in the eye, but like, look at these black eyes. Like, there's certainly a level of consent that occurred. Again, we don't know when it stopped being consensual or not, because we don't really know if she was unconscious. Trevor Bauer's not going to testify. I'm sure he's not the most outspoken guy in all of baseball. All of a sudden the cat's got his tongue and he's not going to speak, which is probably the right move. But like, you know, you ask me, do I think that at the time that she filed this restraining order, that she was truly scared for her life? It's a great question. I mean, I flagged on Instagram, I did it on Twitter as well, three portions of the testimony that I think are relevant to this question. And I think you say the first two are a tie. Could it be consent or not consent? Sure. And you know, if still people know where I'm going, I certainly think there could be a criminal charge here. But this is only about the restraining order. So this third element of future harm is very relevant. The issue of criminal charges is looks to the past, right? It doesn't matter about future harm. It matters what happened and when it happened. So as to the issue of future harm, Trevor Bauer had a recorded phone call with the accuser and the police were listening. So this is a quote. This is from Bauer's attorney from today, actually, on Wednesday. He expressed to you a willingness to not reach out to you if that's what you wanted. She was again pushed. He didn't phrase it like that. Quote, he let you know that he'd abide by what you wanted in terms of contact, the defense question. So Bauer's attorney's kind of painted into her hole. Okay, he was on a call with the police, right? It was a recorded phone call, right? Yeah. Okay, and he said that if you didn't want him to contact you, he wasn't going to contact you. Yeah, did he contact you? I don't think so. Like, so, and then keep going, like, quote, Trevor has not sent you a message since May 30th. So she filed this declaration on June 28th, about 30 days later. Trevor has not sent you a message since May 30th. I have not asked him to stop contacting me because I fear that that's what he will do. He'd already stopped contacting you, Bauer's attorney argued. So Bauer's attorney, I think, is making a good point here. There's been a month of no communication. Bauer's on a recorded line, allegedly, with the police saying, I'm not going to contact you. What necessarily is the fear of future harm? And again, I try to be very fair with this stuff. It's not like, Mike, this situation over in Cleveland, Ohio, with that accuser where Bauer's sending her messages for 3 years saying, I'm going to send a video of us being intimate to a family member, that I might have to kill somebody, right? This is all allegedly from Bauer. Like, I would hate to have to kill somebody. I want to knock you out. Like, some gross stuff that occurred over the course of 3 years, allegedly. Like, it seems to be a month of just absolute silence.
I think Trevor Bauer's attorneys did well to paint that picture. But here's where I think she can really show the fear of future harm. I mean, it all kind of plays into the criminal charges. I think he can be criminally charged on this if there is kind of a showing that she was unconscious. And I think the expert really showed the damages here, the nurse that treated her. Basically, if you go through a traumatic experience like that, and you are now kind of, she is under the fear that I said yes to this, but I didn't say yes to being unconscious and having intercourse with you. So now what happens if I say no to you? If you're doing this to me when I said yes, but it wasn't to the extent of that, what are you going to do when I say no? So in regards to like the phone conversation that he's having, he very well could have just had some, you know, his counsel say, you have to tell her that you're not going to see her again because she's going to file a restraining order. That's very strategic language that Trevor Bauer, who's very flippant and just says whatever kind of off the cuff, especially if the stuff with Cleveland is true, you know, again, allegedly. But I have to believe that she's probably suffering some PTSD, some trauma where she can't express herself the right way because she has gone under allegedly under this excruciating traumatic experience.
I'm going to tell you something that's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate part of the criminal justice system. The DA's office is watching this case on a number of levels. And I said they're watching it for what is said. They're also watching it for how it is said. DA's office is not going to take a case. They're not going to spend a lot of resources and time and the risk of maybe getting an innocent verdict. If they don't think that she's a good witness, right, and she's the only witness to this event, I don't think any medical professionals can testify to the issue of consent. Sure, they can testify to what they called, you know, this nurse called raccoon eyes and strangulation, but there are certain forms, a certain instance where that could occur and there could be consent, right? I don't think anyone's found any case law that says you can't punch someone with someone's consent. You can't do that. Like, it's the issue seems to be hanging on unconsciousness or not a lack of consciousness, and short of video cameras being in the room, it's a he said, she said type deal. So if the DA's office is going to take this case solely on the word of one person versus the other, you know, I don't know if this is a case that's necessarily going to see criminal charges. I mean, I think there could be, I certainly think there could be, but that's why Bauer, I don't think, is going to testify on his own behalf, because I don't think anything's really come out here where he needs to do a lot of damage control. I think we knew everything that occurred already. I think, you know, if anything, this is why Matt Timpanic was very good on our podcast. You know, if you want to give me a prediction, I don't really feel so strongly about it. Matt is saying that he thinks there's a level of habit evidence that could come in and bring this 2017 Indians case into this case. In which case, then you don't just have our Dodgers accuser, right? You have two accusers, right, who are in there and kind of helping bolstering the case. So maybe that's the route to get criminal charges. But I don't think at this point, through 3 days of testimony, I don't think it's a certainty anymore that criminal charges follow here. I think, you know, not that we're going to get into it, I think they're much, much, much more likely on the Deshaun Watson front.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree. The aspect of her being a good witness, and just in regards to her credibility, definitely hurts the prospect of criminal charges coming forward, knowing that the DA is going to have to prosecute this and she's going to have to go through this all over again. I foresee a possibility, though. I still think there's a possibility. There is a lot there. I think the expert nurse gave a lot in regards to the gravity of the injuries that she had, just in regard to, there's definitely an issue of fact as it comes to the level of consent, and the text messages definitely hurt her with the aggression that was used. But if it really boils down to whether or not she was unconscious, I mean, it would just have to be her and her word as the only witness, like you said. But on the aspect of future harm, not her own fear of future harm, I mean, what is the future harm here for Bauer in regards to the MLB's ramifications? What is the next step here for Major League Baseball? You guys talked about this in the last episode, but what's the next step?
I think Major League Baseball is watching very closely. I think, you know, the good and bad thing for baseball's perspective, they're learning a lot more information, but the investigation is continuing to get pushed and pushed because they're learning so much more. For doing a recap of the Shaken stuff, Shaken is saying that the fear from Major League Baseball's perspective is that they issue some type of punishment, a little bit of a Ray Rice type deal. You issue some type of punishment and then you learn some stuff after the fact. I think Ray Rice, actually, they knew about the video, but they didn't think the video was going to get out. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but the fear here is that, like, hey, we're going to punish Bauer for the 2017, you know, Indians incident, the 2021 Dodgers incident, and we're good to go. And then there's another incident that comes out, right? Or there's another portion of the testimony that comes out. So I think they got to wait out until, you know, at least this hearing is over. That's the earliest time they're not going to be getting any new facts. I think it's wait and see mode. And the problem is for the Dodgers, and I'm, you know, Mike, I'm a Giants fan, so I'm not really in support of the Dodgers, but I don't really think it's fair that they're, you know, paying prorated version of $30 million for the year for Bauer. So that's the next shoe. Next shoe is either criminal charges or, some type of suspension. You know, if you're asking me to bet, I think the Major League Baseball is going to weigh in first before the DA's office weighs in. Mike, anything else to add before we put this special episode to the books?
We shall see if Bauer actually takes the stand and speaks, but doubtful.
We shall see. For Mike, Mike is at Mike_son_of_law. Dan Lust, I am at Sports Law Lust. The show is at Con Detrimental. And for Mike, myself, and the Conduct Detrimental family, we will see you next week on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.